we pull up to hole 5 at Ochre Hills. It's a par 4, dogleg right, with lots of tree trouble on the right. We get out. You're feeling confident. You've been striping the golf ball for the past 4 holes. You square up and smash another one down the fairway. It's the best you've ever hit on this hole. You walk up to the ball, feeling invincible, shoot the distance, and hit a great shot. Unfortunately, it lands just short of the green. No big deal, you think. I'll chip on and putt for par, bogey at worst. You walk to your ball, pull out your 52. You swing, make contact. It sails the green and lands in the bunker just on the other side. You walk in shame to the other side and square up with your 60 degree. You shake off the jitters from the last hit. You've got this. You swing again and scull it. It rolls off the green. You do this 2 more times till finally it stays on the green and 2 putt for a snowman on a par 4. Unfortunately, this is all too common for you. This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of 3 nerdy golfers. Our continuing mission, explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses, and to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
Welcome back to For the Record. We were able to get out on the course and actually hit a few balls. So we're going to be talking about how that went, the good, the bad, the ugly.
I thought it would be great to start out this episode with what I want to call our mulligan moments, where we get to visit or revisit something that happened on one of our previous episodes, because already only 2 episodes in and there's already a couple of things that I'm like, we might need to clarify something there.
What are you talking about? All of our content is perfection.
You're right. My bad. Never mind. Moving on.
At least the sound's good, right?
The sound quality is great. It's excellent.
So, all right. So in the spirit of that, the first mulligan moment that I thought of was I was listening to our episode 1, and I showed my wife in the car, and we were at the part where we were talking about your mental attitude, John Paul, especially when talking about people hitting into us when mm-hmm. we're playing.
Oh, yes.
And you're just kind of like, we're 3 guys walking. Of course, one guy solo riding is going to be way faster than us. I just want to clarify, in that situation, of course, we would let them play through.
Absolutely.
We did not mention that. And I was like, we're not those guys that just like hold up people on the course and be like, no, we're in the order that they sent us out. You have to stay. Playing through is very common to us. And yeah. I just wanted to clarify
it
that.
It is. And the only time that we don't let people play through is when the course is jam-packed, because that doesn't help.
There's nowhere for them to go.
Yeah, exactly. They just have to play through 5
other
people.
And frankly, if you're a single driving a cart alone, pick days and times when the course is not packed.
Oh, you mean that a Saturday at 10 a.m. isn't the perfect time to go and try and go as a solo out on the course?
Probably not.
Well, and how do they let them? Like, I feel like every time we play, they pair us with a solo one. So they're either leaving their group or, like, I don't know. I don't understand it.
I don't know if there's some good conspiracy theory music that we could play here, but I do have a conspiracy theory. I suspect many of these individuals are paired with other people, and then they either abandon them or never actually hook up with them. I don't think they're authorized users of the course.
They could just be walk-ons. That's
actually not a bad conspiracy theory, because I got one time I didn't have work. It was not like a holiday, so it was a day like when it was just kind of a random day off out of nowhere. And so I was like, oh, I'll try and go and get 9 in. And I got paired with a guy. And, you know, the starter's like, go out with this guy, you know, and make sure you stay together. It might be a little bit slow going. As soon as we were out of view of the clubhouse, he was gone. And I was like, okay, I don't know where he's going to go, because there wasn't exactly like space for him to just roll through the course. I think he must have skipped a couple of holes and went ahead. So he might be onto something there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're one of those guys, don't get upset when you're behind somebody else. because you're basically going around the rules. Be better. Just be better.
Yeah, be better. I like Eric's message there. Be better. Because, you know, at
golf is for everyone. Just make it good for everyone.
Well, and there's a phrase, you know, you don't want, nobody likes a 5-hour, 18-hole round, right? If it's okay to be bad at golf. This whole podcast is centered around us not being particularly good at golf. Mm-hmm. You can be bad at golf, and it's okay to golf. Just suck faster.
Yeah.
Second thing I wanted to bring up, a golf article pulled up in my email, and apparently there is kind of a clubhouse in San Francisco that has a burger dog. Wanted to get Eric's opinion on this because we already established his hate for hot dogs. It's garbage meat. It doesn't matter if it's an all beef, if it's a kosher, if it's
a loathing. Pork
meat. It doesn't matter. He hates them. That he has made that very clear, but I'm curious.
Is this a hot dog that's made out of hamburger, or is it a hamburger that is made out of dogs?
No, it is a hamburger, like ground beef hamburger in the shape of a hot dog.
That sounds worse.
That they put on a hot dog bun and fix it up hot dog style, but it's just ground beef.
I'd try it, but just the thought of it does not sound pleasant. I'm just picturing taking a sausage wrap and just stuffing it with ground beef and sticking that in a bun. Doesn't sound appetizing, but it could be. So I am willing to try most anything once.
It's apparently really well loved. And so I was just curious because a lot of the comments were like, oh, I love these. And I know you hate hot dogs, but a hamburger hot dog.
Yeah. If a listener is out there and they're like, oh, this is a different type of hot dog, I bet he'd like it. Comment and let us know and we'll try it.
I have a follow-up question that I was going to hit, Eric.
Okay.
This is specifically for you.
All right.
I know you're a big cheese guy.
Oh, yeah.
Love cheese. And that you spent some time in France. You appreciate really good food. Is there any condiment that is good enough that if you slathered sufficient amounts of it on a hot dog, it would make it appealing to you?
A condiment?
Just like imagine a hot dog with like a whole wheel of camembert cheese just melted over the top of it. Like,
yeah, there's some cheeses that might do it. Yeah, actually. If you put a hot dog inside of a really good cheese, it could taste right. Pretty good.
Challenge accepted.
Summer's coming. I think we got to try this.
We got to find a hot dog.
I want to get some ground beef. And I want to cook it like hamburger style, but put it in a hot dog bun. But then also we should find a high quality regular hot dog, smother it in a high quality cheese, and see what Eric's take is.
I just saw Eric's face when you. I just saw Eric's face when you said the words high quality regular hot dog. I think he believes that's an oxymoron at his core.
We got to play on Saturday, so we're going to be going over how that went. Straight off the bat, we get up to the tee. And we flip the tee. John Paul was first. How did that go?
You know, here's what I'm going to say. There's no easy way to do this. You anticipate the first shot of the season all year. You know you're going to be a little bit rusty, but you've been visualizing the first hole all winter long. Every time you've been in the sim and hit one, you're like, oh, yeah, right down the middle. And you never see in your mind the possibility that you're literally just going to duck hook it left straight into the nearest tree, which is exactly what I did. It hammered that tree.
To be completely fair, like we had gotten to the course early enough that we were anticipating maybe sharing a small bucket of balls, chipping onto the green, doing some putting.
Yep.
We didn't get to do any of that. And I'm not going to complain. We get to the clubhouse and we're like, hey, our tee time's in like an hour. And the guy's like, great, you can go out now. We hand him our punch cards, and he gives a little fake clippity-clippity and didn't actually punch our cards. And so he's just kind of like, you can go out now if it's like free golf. I'm never going to complain about that.
Yeah. He never complained about free golf. And he sent us out the front because it was wide open, which was super nice of him. But I don't know if you guys heard on my backswing for that first tee shot, literally my back cracked in like three places taking the club back. So I knew it wasn't going to go well.
Cody's first shot.
Oh, why would you do this to me?
Well, I mean, it's the first shot. It's important.
It was. I saw John Paul's, you know, duck hook left into the middle of the trees and was like, great, I can totally follow that up and get us something right down the middle of the fairway. We figured first round, we're going to do a little scramble and tee my ball up and let it fly and top it 3 feet in front of the tee. And it went like maybe 80 yards up.
And
it was...
Yeah, Cody and John Paul were right next to
each
other.
I have to say that your shot made my shot feel much better, because even nailing the tree, I was a ways further than you were.
You were, but the ground took the significant momentum away from me.
And to be fair to the listeners, we had not decided to do a scramble until that exact moment.
Yeah. So then I got up. On that first hole that we play, there is a road off to the right. For the longest time, it didn't bother me. And then we went together, and the group in front of us hit a ball, and it nailed a car.
Oh, yeah.
And they came over, and they were, like, the people were mad. And ever since then, I can't get it out of my head. Like, just don't hit it. And I hit it over there every time.
And there's, like, not even a tall enough fence blocking you from driving it onto this road that's parallel to the fairway on that hole.
Yeah.
Normally you have like those good like 40, 50, you know, foot fences. That doesn't exist here for some reason.
Oh. Yeah.
It makes no sense.
And when Eric said that they nailed that car, it hit the dead center of the windshield. There wasn't an inch on that windshield that wasn't cracked. Yeah. It was pulverized.
So I got up. All last season, I've been hitting off to the right. We figured out this winter that we, in the sim, that it was a grip issue. My grip was weak. John Paul showed me the right way, and I decided to try that. And this time I got up, I picked a line, and I was like, I'm not going to kill it. I just need a nice straight drive. And that's what I got. It went straight down the fairway. It went a good distance, not the farthest, but it was a good drive, and it felt great.
And we were all very grateful.
It was a great drive. It was a great way to kick off our impromptu scramble.
Yeah. And I don't think we go hole by hole on this, but we probably do need to let the listeners know that the outcome of the first hole was tremendously positive, and also the best hole of the day.
Well, and afterwards, we're walking away in triumph, and John Paul's like, let me try chipping that one more time, and chips it right in.
Yeah. That could have been an eagle, but it was a birdie.
It was a birdie.
Kick in birdie, so that was really nice.
Overall, Cody, how do you feel you did on the day?
I had a couple of memorable shots. One of the questions that I was trying to guess prepare myself going into the round was, how well did our off-season sim sessions transfer to like going straight and playing out on a real course?
Hmm.
And personally, for me, not very well.
I don't know. I feel like you did pretty well.
I thinned every single iron that day.
Yeah.
Hmm. So what I realized, I don't know, maybe three holes in, was that I had moved the ball in my stance because of the sim. And so I adjusted. And I think that's where you need to get the hang of it again, is where in the stance you need to put things.
I you know what else I think, and it sounds kind of dumb and a little bit superficial to say this. I think that where we stand in the sim setup, and I normally don't wear my golf shoes in the sim, and there's just a slight difference in the sole elevation on my shoes, and then also where we stand on the rubber mat compared to the mat versus real grass. I think that I was thinning everything. That half of an inch, quarter of an inch, was just making that much different for me to not extend all the way down and get, you know, to compress the ball.
Yeah. And I think we need to do next year. I think we need to update the sim, just how we stand. And we all need to wear our golf shoes.
Well, I do wear my golf shoes in the sim.
I do too.
As you well know. But I am going to go back on this, Cody, because I think that the issue is deeper than that, and I was waiting for the opportunity to talk to you about this. So I've saved this glorious content for right now. First of all, we know that there is nothing wrong with our game that cannot be fixed with an exceptional expenditure of money. And so better equipment equals better golf, invariably, right?
That's
right.
A universal truth.
That
in golf.
Is. There's no denying that, right? And so the shiny object will always come through. You, my friend, legitimately need beefier golf shoes. Cody has some very comfortable golf shoes, and they have very not aggressive spikes.
Oh, yeah.
And Cody relies on ground force reaction much more than either of the two of us do, simply because he generates his power through his feet. And the number of times where you really hit a good solid drive last year, like out of your socks, that your right foot didn't slip out on you is a small number. Yeah. Those shoes do not grip the ground.
And we're not
and
on...
in the sim, when you're standing on that solid rubber mat, your feet never move. When you're on the grass and you're using that ground force reaction, the ground under you is going to respond differently, and that has got to just mess with your feel.
Yeah.
I've thought about this. Thank you, by the way. When you brought it up, it felt a little confrontational. I was just like, whoa, his eyes got wide open there. He's going
to
hit me.
I don't want it to be misinterpreted because I don't want people to think that I think you need better shoes for ground force reaction because of some physical characteristic, which might obviously jump to mind. However... you do need to know you need some shoes, man.
And it's fair.
You need grippy shoes. Yeah.
So the shoes that I have now, just to put a picture in everybody's mind, like they're not like traditional golf spikes, and I probably need to invest in something that has a bit more of those replaceable, you know, round spikes that can go in the shoes. And I have good news.
Hmm.
Because I believe we are going golf shopping on Saturday.
Oh, yes, we are. Yeah.
And
will you be tempted?
Oh, absolutely. I don't even know if it's tempting. I've been planning on it.
Oh, nice. Excellent.
Yeah, that'll be good.
And we can hit a couple of shops while we're out and make sure we get you the best fit. But I do have to tell you, just on a side note, that the other day I happened to be in a sporting goods store and I walked by a wall full of ice climbing equipment. And
they had
those cleats that they attached to the bottom of their boots. And I was like, he doesn't need new shoes. Just clip those on his current shoes.
Yeah, and I'm sure the greenskeeper would love you.
Clomp, clomp, clomp.
All right, over to you, John Paul. How do you feel you went on the round?
I am actually really, really pleased because I'm always worried about exactly what Cody was talking about, the transition from artificial turf into regular grass. And I learned the most fascinating thing the last 2 weeks we worked in the sim to get ready. And I learned out that I thought all winter I was hitting the ball a little thin the whole time. Mm. And once we got the Dr. Scholl's foot spray and started cataloging the strikes on the face, what I found out is that I was actually hitting it slightly fat.
Yeah.
And I was hitting it high on the face. And that the reason why I was losing so much power was because I was striking the mat just marginally before the ball.
You thought you were hitting thin every single time. Every time. You thought thin and toe.
Thin and toe. And it turned out it was fat dead center.
Yeah.
It was just fat.
Yeah. And you kept.
And once I knew
worse.
That and made an adjustment, basically the adjustment's simple. I just stand up a little bit taller. And so my only swing thought was, smooth tempo, stand a little taller. And I have to say, my face control was not perfect. I lost a few left. I lost a few right. I had a really horrible first drive. But other than that, I was very pleased with my ball striking.
And to be clear, when you say you lost a couple left and right, not actually physically lost balls. None of us lost a ball on the round.
Yep. No golf balls lost.
So our misses are getting better. Even when we have them. You're just meaning like, okay, I hit left or right of the green when I was, or my target line.
All right. So for me, the round went pretty well. I mentioned that during this season, we played in the sim and I strengthened my grip. And my biggest miss now, before I was hitting all over left, right, all over the place. This time, everything was going left because my grip was so much stronger and I didn't know how to square the face up anymore. And then John Paul mentioned that I needed to give more power. And then the last hit, I gave it more power and it went perfectly straight. So I'm going to focus on giving more power, pushing through the ball, and I think I'll have a great season.
Overall, I thought it was a fun outing that we all did in preparation because on, what is it, Saturday or Sunday is the official start of golf season for us.
Uh-huh.
So next week, when we can hopefully get out, we can start counting those scores.
Yep.
Bring it on. What's in the bag? Butter, what's in the bag? What's in the bag? Let's talk about what's in the bag in the What's in the Bag episode.
Putter edition.
Yeah, we're going to talk about what's in our bags. But rather than doing the whole boring bag for each one of us or doing it in a different episode, what we've decided to do is we're going to focus on one club each week, and we'll talk about our individual clubs.
Club type. We're not doing every iron individually.
No.
Irons
will count as a single category. But today's episode is putters. And putters are arguably the most important club in your bag because you use it on every single hole. And if you're us, you use it many more times than is necessary on every hole.
I speak for yourself, man. I too putt.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit about the putters that we have, why we chose them, anything you want to know about them. And I think we should start with Cody on this one. Cody, start us off.
Okay. I'm going to tell about my putter with a very short history of my putters because my first golf set that I ever had came with, it was a Ram set with this horrible Ram putter that I used for years.
Oh, Ram.
Yeah. I love Ram. And I, by the time that I finally upgraded, like even when I bought a new set of irons and everything, that Ram putter carried with me just because I couldn't justify, you know, that much on just a putter. I definitely undervalued the putter. So then I, you know, it was kind of when the spiders were pretty popular. And so I like went and tried hitting a couple of those in store. And I was like, oh yeah, this is great. And then the price tag, I was like, never mind, it's not that great. So I bought a cheap knockoff of Amazon, and it was probably one of the stupid decisions
that was
I've
like
ever made.
The Temu spider putter. I remember that thing.
It was on Amazon.
Is
it horrible.
That one that's right there?
And I think you bought the same one after me. Yeah. And you were like, I liked it. And I was like, dude, I don't know. I don't like it.
I need to tell everybody who doesn't know this. I have no idea what brand this is. I don't think the people who made it know what brand it is. But it's got like these two protrusions on the back to make it look like the spider. But they look like tiny like jet engines. So it looks like you could accelerate through the ball.
I thought there were weights that you could adjust. But nope.
No, they're not. And so
they're rocket ships.
That's what I used for a while. And I just had the hardest time with pace control. And then John Paul is just like, dude, Cody, I love you, man. That is the wrong putter for you. And John Paul has been very adamant that just like in the Harry Potter universe, a wizard doesn't choose the wand chooses the wizard. The putter chooses the golfer. And so he had me try blade-style putters, and my control actually was a lot better. A lot of people have problems with face control on blade-style putters. Mine actually got better, and my distance control increased. And so at first, I had like a Wilson Harmonized with H4, I think, which was a really good putter. I actually thought it was pretty decent. Mm-hmm. But all of that to say, I have since started using Kirkland Signature Milled Face KS1 putter with the added-on weight kit to make it a little bit heavier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's what I've been rocking for the past 2-3 years to this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any complaints. I will say I don't know if it's my forever putter. In fact, it's most likely not. I do like the milled face on it, and so far it does. It's got like the nice big super stroke, you know, grippy handle on it, along with the optional, you know, 50-gram weight on the head.
Oh, I didn't realize there was a weight on the head.
Yeah, the weight mm-hmm. there, and then oh, nice. There's two weights on the bottom if I want to adjust any of that. And that's what I've been doing, and it seems to work out so far for me.
Your putter doesn't have a name yet, does it?
It doesn't. I mean, what is it? $1.50 combo?
$1.50 combo is a great name. Eric, tell us about your putter.
All right. So to give you a history on my putters, I, like Cody said, I copied his putter and it went okay, but I couldn't feel. And so my distance control was pretty off. But I will say I did hit a 25-foot putt at Coral Canyon that was one of the best putts of my life with that putter. I couldn't get distance, long distance, short distance. I was overhitting, underhitting. And then Cody got his and we did a round, and every time he'd hit, I hit like almost exactly the same line. And I thought maybe the blade is for me. And then last year
you're not telling that whole story.
There was a time when you're like, can I borrow your putter when you're done with it?
Oh, you're not telling the story about why he was borrowing your putter on that clear. We went golfing, and as we were getting in the car together, we got halfway to the course, and Eric was like, oh, I knew I forgot something. We're like, what did you forget? He's like, oh, my putter.
So this last, well, I guess it's been over a year now.
I think it was just under, wasn't it?
About this time last year.
About this time last year.
We went to Coral Canyon, and while we were in that area, we went and looked at some clubs, and I was looking for a putter. That was my goal, and maybe a couple of other things, but mostly a putter. And we went a few places, and then I picked out this Ping Answer 2D. It's all black, completely black. It's beautiful. The handle is, it's not a big puffy grip.
It's not a jumbo grip.
Yeah, it's a pistol grip, and I was sinking putts left and right, and I thought, this is it. This was my Harry Potter moment. And then we went out on the course, and I played lights out with my putter. And from then on, when I putt, I've been doing really well. Dialed it in. I don't know what else to say. It's a beautiful thing.
It's the strongest club in your bag.
It matches you very well, I'll say.
It does.
And I do believe it has a name.
It does. It is the USS Vengeance after the...
it's the best name ever.
It's after the Star Trek where they have that crazy... And it's like the Dark Enterprise that... One man can pilot and destroy an entire fleet.
That would be Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, love my putter. It is, I don't know if it's my forever putter, but I really, the one thing that I would like is the weights. I've never had those, and I thought it might be interesting, but this putter hasn't let me down, and I love it.
So, John Paul, I'm very excited to hear you go next about your putter, because since I have started golfing with you, I think you've used probably about 4 or 5 different putters at any given time.
Well,
you've gone through at least 3 since I started.
How do you guys figure?
You had the one that you were playing when we first started that you then lent me for a little while.
Yeah.
You got the 2-ball.
No, I never had a 2-ball.
Well, you went to a...
I have owned 2 Odyssey putters. I shall now elaborate. And they're the only 2 putters you've ever seen me play with, Cody. So here's the story. When I started golfing many years ago, all of my clubs were very, very used. And so like I knew nothing about brand names or anything on putters. And I had a putter that came with the set that my wife bought me when we first got married. And it literally was bent at the neck. So its alignment was off, like from the factory. It was a terrible, terrible club. And I played with it for a long time. But I never really got a feel for it. And for my birthday 1 year, Rachel took me to a place and said, find a putter. And it was my birthday present. And I got an Odyssey White Hot Blade putter with the original pistol grip. And when I talk about the wand choosing the wizard, it's no joke. Like literally, I know it's just the stupid little practice screen in the sporting goods store. I nailed everything for 30 minutes with that putter.
You know that all of the there's a slant and they all lead towards the cup.
I know that. They're trying to get you to buy putters, but nevertheless, the issue was that this thing was like $120, and that was at a time when Rachel and I had no money. And the idea of spending $120 on a putter was absurd to me, and she went over and grabbed it out of my hands and went and paid for it, and I felt unbelievably guilty and also incredibly happy. And I putted with that putter for years and I loved it, and it had the perfect feedback. I could feel exactly what it was doing. The issue is that the grip eventually wore out, and this was when the Super Stroke big fat grip became like a big thing. And so I immediately went out, bought a Super Stroke fat grip. I can regrip my putter. Ripped off the old grip, put on the new Super Stroke grip, and it ruined it. I lost all feel with that putter. I couldn't sink a thing. And what you're thinking about is I tried everything with that putter for like a year to make it work.
Maybe that was it, because I remember you had the fat grip, mm-hmm. and I remember you hated it, but I also remember when you didn't have it, I guess I didn't put 2 and 2 together that it was the same putter.
It's the same club. I got so desperate at one point that I altered my putting grip so that the 2 front fingers on my right hand were slid all the way down the shaft so that I could get some feedback off of the shaft when I make contact with the ball, because I think those super strokes feel so dead. And in my mind, putting is a very feelsy thing. Like it's not a mechanical swing. So I decided I was going to replace the putter. At the same time, I was having some we played a lot of scrambles. We played a lot of best ball. I'm getting a little older and my back is not great. And you know what? I was just like, every time I went to the course, you know how people like flip the ball up with the back of their blade putter?
Yeah.
I've never been able to do that. I've tried my whole life. I've watched so YouTube videos. And so I see guys doing this.
I can just picture you studying and be like, okay, you just flip it like
this. It looks so cool.
Eric and I got it down.
I know.
It's pretty easy.
It's so embarrassing, but I can't do it. It looks so cool. And I was like, you know what? To heck with it. So I went out with my wife and I was like, the time has come. I want an Odyssey. I need another Odyssey White Hop, but I'm going for the 7. It's always been one of my favorite clubs. And there's like 20 varieties of that thing. I ended up with this guy. And the 7, for those who don't know, has this beautiful, like,
for some reason, I thought you went back to a blade.
Going back on the back, and it's just fantastic for picking up a golf ball, and it's great.
It's kind of funny. It, honestly, it's like a blade with wings.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's where I got confused, was I thought you went to a full mallet and then back to a blade, but no. It's just kind of a hybrid.
And so it has some significant advantages, not least of which is the fact that I can pick up a ball with it, but it's also got the original Odyssey pistol grip on it. So the feel on it is unbeatable.
It's a nice
player. I named it Captain Spock. It is the most expensive club in my bag.
Because it's giving you Live Long and
it
Prosper?
It does. It looks exactly like Captain Spock giving the Live Long and Prosper sign.
So for today's birdie beer, we have Olipop. Is that how it's pronounced? Olipop?
I think so. And to be completely fair, I'm not sure if this qualifies as a root beer. It says right on the can, Olipop Classic Root Beer. But then immediately right underneath, it's a new kind of soda. And it's like probiotics, botanicals, and plant fiber. So it's like trying to it's trying to be like a healthy soda, I guess.
No. Why have you done this to us, Cody? Why?
So I raided the store, and I saw that there. And it says root beer, and John Paul's reaching for the can.
Let me see that.
It is 35 calories for the entire can. Oh, so it is still, it's not a zero sugar, but it should still be pretty, friendly for your diabetic needs.
It looks like a root beer. All right. It doesn't look weird.
Listeners, I want you to understand the depth of the sacrifice that I'm about to make, putting something that is both probiotic and botanical and has plant fiber and claims to be a new kind of root beer in my body for your enjoyment.
I've had this before.
Here we go.
It does smell like a root beer. I'll give it a good smell.
Now we make the chink.
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 I don't like that.
That is horrible.
I was going to say, I don't mind it.
Are you serious?
Oh. No, that's. Ugh.
I don't mind it as not a root beer.
I'm trying to decide what that tastes like.
It doesn't taste like a root beer, but it doesn't taste, I don't think it tastes horrible.
It has like that root beer kind of like hint, like the root beer barrel candies.
I think it tastes better.
And then it goes so bad so fast.
What did we have last time?
The mug, the zero sugar mug.
Yeah, it was better than that one because that one had the chemically.
That's all I'm getting out of this from start to finish. Like we said last.
I feel like this is a little smoother.
We said last time that the mugs started good and finished bad. I think this is just bad start to end.
Oh, do you know what? I placed it. I figured out exactly what it tastes like.
I don't think it tastes amazing, but I don't think it tastes as bad as that
No,
one.
I know exactly what it tastes like. It tastes like chronic depression. It's horrible.
It's not.
A terrible, yeah, terrible yeah. beverage.
All right.
It starts bad. It slides down bad. It finishes bad. And the bad keeps going.
You have a quote that you like to pull from a good place where, we talk about how frozen yogurt is the most human thing possible.
Yeah.
I won't take your thunder. Go ahead and share us
Ted,
a little bit.
Ted Danson is a gift. He just talks about frozen yogurt being the most human thing ever. Take something which is virtually perfect, namely ice cream, and ruin it so you can have more. That is basically what that. Okay,
so,
let's
this,
go.
This
number
soda
rankings
feels
on
like
this.
That.
Yeah.
But, okay, I have had worse drinks. Like, it's not like La Crap or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not okay.
I got a good mouthful that time, and yeah, maybe I was just. Yeah, if you get a good mouthful, it's not amazing.
I'm going to give this a 2. In that, if I were trapped in the desert, dying of thirst, and I had to choose between drinking this and death, it has the benefit of being cold and wet. I think that's all it's got going for it.
So is that higher or lower than water for you?
Chumpal does not drink a lot of water.
I don't think I've ever seen him drink water. Unless it was like, no, yeah, actually, I've never. We went on a trip. And Cody and I woke up at 2 a.m. to hear.
We've been boogie boarding, and I drink water when I'm in the ocean, albeit not on purpose, but I have drunk water.
Oh, no. Tell the people, Eric, please.
So we went on a golf trip. We're sharing a room, and we wake up to 2 a.m. to hear, look, 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 look. And we look over, and John Paul is chugging down a Sprite.
I think it was a zero sugar Sprite
at 2 a.m.
Like, what are you? What are you doing, man? And he's like, I was thirsty. And I was like, for a zero sugar Sprite in the middle of the night.
And I believe my answer was, it's not caffeinated because it was bedtime.
It's not going to keep you up all night. I guess it has that redeeming feature, but yeah, man,
Listeners,
I cannot think of anything more
thirst quenching?
Yeah.
Listeners, chime in on this. I cannot be the only late night soda drinker on the planet.
That wasn't late night. That's early morning.
No, it wasn't even that. You were asleep and got up to take a drink.
And it was I was thirsty.
If I'm staying
your thirst.
It's not a cup of milk. It's not like it's not refreshing in any way.
I don't know, man. After I go to bed, it's ice cold water for me till I wake up.
Yeah. I've never had a glass of milk before bed kind of thing. But after nine, it's water.
But it's in terms of this Olipop, two and a half.
I'm giving it a two.
I'm giving it a 2.5.
I'm giving it a four.
Four?
Because I think there's lower to go.
Oh, ouch. That's
battery acid.
Can't wait to see where that goes.
Well, I mean, we've got
Whittier flavored battery acid.
Mr. Clean.
We've got more Drano. To taste. I might change that later, but at this point, I'm sticking with a four.
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
So I had this idea for a segment. I watch a lot of Simpsons, and
you are the Simpsons quote guy.
Maybe not like the later seasons. I kind of have the core seasons that I watched, kind of for several years when I considered the show good. Anyway, comic
ouch.
I'm gonna say that I think that has been reasonably consistently good most of its run.
So comic book guy is. I think he's a hilarious character. And I had this idea for a segment called Worst Episode Ever.
Excuse me. I think you'll find that the worst episode ever is.
Worst episode ever. And it was a chance for us to spitball on some things that, you know, kind of like hot takes on things that are terrible. And the question that I wanted to pose to you guys today, and I'm really excited to hear Eric's on this because he just hates weather in general when it's anything except beautiful outside. And I don't like heat. What is the worst weather you've ever golfed in? John Paul's over here pondering, and you're just kind of like, I already know.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Let's hear it.
So it was cold, and I remember it wasn't raining the whole time, but it was a little wet, and it started to, like, get the in-between rain and snow where it's like the slush, and it was coming down a little bit, and I was just frozen, and I think I was in the cart with John Paul, and John Paul was grumpy that day, and so that didn't help contribute to it. So by the end of the day, I was like,
I think that's unfair because I was grumpy, but you looked like a wet cat.
Well, there was just nothing to enjoy. It was go out and play golf in the cold, wet, and then get back in the cart with John Paul, where he's going to be grumpy the whole time and complain, even though he's playing lights out.
To be fair, being cold when you're wet makes things 20 times worse.
And like, I didn't prepare properly with enough layers. Yeah.
So for you, cold, wet, rainy, frozen to bone.
I remember this round, and I remember that we got to the 16th hole, and I was like, hey, Eric, come on, we're at the tee box. And he's like, no, I'm staying here.
I'm done.
And well, I went over to you, Cody, and I was like, I think Eric's out. I think he's just staying in the cart for the rest of the round, and that is exactly what he did.
He did. He did.
Yeah. I my hands were so cold. I holding a club when I was making contact with a ball, it was going all the way through my bones. It was unpleasant all around.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to go opposite of that because I remember the worst weather that I golfed in for myself because it was like 105 degrees at our home course in middle of July. and we were walking, and I just got so lightheaded that I couldn't continue on.
We were worried you were going to die. Was that
when I was with you?
I think you both were there. Yeah, we were all walking together.
He literally collapsed by the tee box to the seventh hole.
Well, it wasn't the seventh. It was the back.
I found a gnolly hill on the side of the tee box, and I was like, do I keep going? At the end of the sixth hole, as we were walking off of the green, I just felt like the white flush feeling come over my skin. And I was like, oh, man, I'm gonna pass out.
Was that the time that you called the office and they came and got you and you had your cart and they're like, what do we do with the cart?
Yes.
And they just had you drag it behind. It was the sketchiest thing.
I thought you were
going to
fall out. Like, I
called the clubhouse and was like, because we had walked and I was like, I can't walk back. Like, this is bad. And so I called the clubhouse and I was like, hey, do you have a dude that could like come pick me up? Because I'm going to pass out here. And they sent this, you know, teenage kid who was really nice. And we loaded my golf bags up and I was like, oh, I have my push cart. And he's like, just drag it behind while I'm like holding my arm straight out of the cart, trying to like make sure it doesn't fly.
It's bouncing everywhere.
It's bouncing. As we drive past John Paul and Eric, they're looking at me like, what is going on? And my wife came and picked me up. And then we went home and I crashed on the bed and slept for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Like it was just.
Heat exhaustion.
The heat exhaustion got me.
Yeah. All right, John Paul.
We talked about when we got to the clubhouse, Eric and I were joking as we were walking into the clubhouse. We're like, do you think we go to the front counter and ask if they have a dead guy in the lost and found? We could take his body back to his wife.
Who gets his driver?
No, neither of us want
your driver. Neither of us want your driver. All right.
We take your push cart, though.
Okay. I've been thinking about this because you guys know me. I love golfing, and I will golf in the heat. I will golf in the cold. I will golf in the rain.
You're the postal worker of golf.
I will golf in the hail, which we did.
Rain or sleet.
I'm going to demonstrate this. The end of last season. I went out to golf, and it was a twilight round, so the sun was going down. I was playing against the sun, and it was quite rainy and blustery, but there was significant thunder and lightning. But because it was a twilight round, the guys in the clubhouse had gone home, so there's no one to blow the horn to bring anybody back in.
Was this when we teed off and it was snowing?
Yeah, it was snowing on the tee box, and lightning starts striking. We're on the, let me see if I can do the math on it. We're on this seventh hole. It starts going crazy. It's snowing. We get to the eighth hole. We tee off. Lightning strikes quite close to us. And I'm like, we just got to play fast. Now, think about that for a moment. How would playing fast somehow prevent you? Like, I don't know the speed at which storms travel, but I'm not out walking it with a golf bag. It's not going to happen. And I'm just like, we got to go fast. And I'm just having images of myself being destroyed by lightning. And I'm in the fairway of an extremely exposed space with a metal stick holding it towards the heavens and thinking, if I just finish quickly, I'll probably be fine. That just shows you the dedication I have. There's no weather that will drive me off the course. You have to drag me away.
I remember looking over at you right after that lightning strike, and it was just kind of that fleeting moment of the conversation that we had with just our eyes of, do we stop this round and be safe and go home? Do we hit the deck and lay on the ground? Or we just go? And then after, you know, it was probably just like a couple of second pause, you're like, well, let's just hurry up.
There's only two holes left. We'll probably survive. It's time to talk about inner caddy. There is no secret to anybody who's golfed for any period of time that golf is largely a mental game. And I think if we are serious about improving ourselves as golfers this year and moving forward, we have to spend at least a little bit of time talking about the mental game and combating various mental frailties that might hamstring us along the way. And so for today's episode of Inner Caddy, what I'd like to put out there is actually a truth moment from the very first episode where we were talking about the detriment of getting really angry on the course and what that does to your game.
Grumpy pants?
Grumpy pants. So what causes grumpy pants And how do you overcome them? That's the question of the day.
I have a thought while you're thinking, Eric. Or do you want to?
Go ahead.
Yeah. For me, it's mismatched expectations.
I thought you were going to say mismatched socks there for a second.
Mismatched pants sometimes. No. when you're on the course, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the episode, where all off season, you're thinking about that time when you get to that tee box for the first shot, and you never imagine it being anything but that shot that goes straight as an arrow right down the fairway. And then when that's not what happens, it's irksome. Like, it can cause kind of that rising angst. So I think for me, it's when I feel like I should be better than I am playing. And then when exterior things on the course happen, like the balls flying into you, or the loud music from the guys that are driving past on their golf cart so you can hear three holes over. That just adds on to it. If it's just that kind of environmental stuff alone, I can deal with it. But if I'm failing to meet my own expectations added on top of that, then it multiplies for me.
I think that that's very, very true. And I don't pretend to be a guru or anything, but all life is suffering, and expectation is the root of all of that.
Chakra.
And no, but it's very true, right? And so you get a triple bogey and you just get mad. You're like, I should be past this. How could I possibly four putt this? And we get so angry with ourselves, and it screws up the round because you can't focus on the shot ahead.
And we've talked about how golf should be one shot at a time, right? Mm-hmm. The only thing you should be concerned with is your next shot. Yep. We shouldn't be thinking, I'm four over, that means I need to get four under for the next four holes in order to make this. You know, we can't think like that. We have to think, the only thing that I should be focusing on now is this next shot and where it needs to go.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do.
And I'm a huge fan of the Chasing Scratch podcast. We all listen to it. Eli's coach is a guy named the Reverend Larry Ward. He's not actually a reverend. They just nicknamed him that. But Larry was on an episode that I was listening to, a rerun of. Is he a real person? Oh, yeah. Larry Ward is a real golf coach, thousands of students, very, very well-renowned, has helped some very high-level players. But he's got something that he actually has printed on his shoe, and it just says next. Because you can't control anything that's already happened. And when you get tied up in what's already happened, it makes it impossible to focus on what you got to do. And so he just looks at his shoe. Next. What's the next shot? Next.
That's good advice. All right, Eric, hit us. What you got?
All right. So I did better last year than the year before that, and I plan to do better this year. But mine is when I am close to the green and I just can't seem to chip on. And I'm just going back and forth and back and forth. And then I hear John Paul over in the corner complaining about his round. And as he's like, I had a double bogey on that last one as I got a snowman. And and it's just like, yeah, boo-hoo for you.
The epitome of this happened, I don't think it was this last round. It was early last year. And John Paul, and I will remember this till the day we die, and I know you do too, Eric, you were just having a really bad round, and we had gotten to the end of hole 5 or 6. We were on the green, hole 5. It's a three-tiered green.
I hate that green.
So
that's my nemesis. And
they put the pin in the middle tier often, so you have to get it just right, or it comes all the way back down.
And it rolls off if you're on the back and you... Yeah.
Yeah. Sticking it on that green is very difficult. And Eric was already having a pretty rough round with his short game the entire time. And we could tell that Eric was getting pretty flustered and frustrated. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, everyone handles that a little bit differently. And we got to the green and, you know, John Paul in his nicest, friendly, I'm trying to be a good friend moment was just kind of like, Eric, it's okay. And I don't know if you like heard the deafening silent stare that happened, but it was like there was no sound left in the universe. And Eric's eyes pop open wide and he looks right at John Paul. And the only thing I heard was, John Paul, stop talking.
He'd been trying to be nice the entire time, but it was just like, I don't need that right now. It was my fifth chip to try and get on. I don't need a pep talk.
It was not a blow up.
Where you just got to walk away.
But it wasn't like yelling. It wasn't like throwing club or anything. It was just this cold stare of death of just stop talking. And it cut you deep. We looked at each other, and I don't think we said a word because we're like, we have to obey this command.
we just have to stop talking.
I follow the rule of if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. So it was, if he keeps talking, I'm going to blow up at him, and I don't want to, so I'm telling you to stop talking so that everyone remains friendly for the next little while.
It's a great story, and I will forever remember it. And it's one of those things that you can look back on, and we talk memorably about it now.
And I apologize like two holes later.
No, it's fine. But I'm talking about in that moment, though, that mental state. It can affect how you play golf. And it's weird because we talk about how golf, it is strongly mental, but that mental fortitude and strength, I feel, also expands into other areas of your life, right?
If it does. You
can have strong mental fortitude on the course in a game that is impossible to play with hitting a stick in a ball 500 yards away in like three or four shots, like if you can get good at that and when things go bad, you're okay with it, like how much strength is it at work or at your other relationships that you have at home or whatever? I feel like it is a good mental exercise to master.
It really is. And not to get all schmaltzy, but really that's the beauty behind the game of golf and why we love it so much. If it were easy, if you could master it in a month, it wouldn't be worth doing. What makes golf so amazing is it's a wonderful platitude for life in that no matter how hard you try, no matter how much you strive, it will always elude you to a certain degree, but you learn a lot about who you are and your own strengths when you're faced with that challenge and how you rise to it. So with that being said, I have a proposal because we all have this issue that we admittedly have where we struggle mentally on the course. All of us struggle with our swing from time to time. We have technical issues, but when it's a mental struggle, I think that we need an obscure, nerdy reference word that we can agree upon, like a safe word that we can use with each other when we see the other one slipping to bring them back. And it could be something simple like next or something like that. But there's got to be something very particular to us that is amusing enough that even when you're super pissed off, it can't land badly.
I have one for us.
Okay.
Shark spray.
Shark spray. It's no match.
Nothing is a match for Batman.
Nothing is a match for the bat shark spray.
Was it shark repellent?
It was shark repellent. The bat
shark repellent. That's it.
Shark repellent.
Okay, so here's the thing. When Mr. Grumpy Pants John Paul shows up and he has his grumpy pants on, if Eric and I look at him and say, hey, shark repellent, is he just going to get more angry at us?
No, because I think it needs to be a two-part phrase, okay? Because I think it has to be something that Buddy A says, but Buddy B has to have an inside joke response that is lighthearted to basically say, I acknowledge that, and I'm going to accept it. Then that's our ultimate thing, because if you don't get that back, you know it's nuclear. Get away fast, right?
Okay.
So So shark repellent spray. And then we just say, is no match.
Is no match. Shark repellent spray. The goggles do nothing.
The goggles do nothing. That's perfect because you have to say it in the accent.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
Could you imagine? Be like, hey, John Paul, shark repellent. I just imagine you look over and be like, the goggles do nothing.
I could just imagine some poor fourth guy paired with us on a Saturday afternoon like, I block it right into the trees. Shark repellent sprays. The goggles do nothing.
Ah, my
this
eyes.
This guy's going to be like, get me out of here.
I love it. It's so good.
Yeah,
real acid?
Real acid? So I was thinking about it, and the last like quarter of the season last year, I started to get better. When I'd start to get angry, I would think, one, I'm not taking down prod at work. I'm a developer for a company that deals in billions of dollars of transactions. So I'm not taking that down, and I'm having a good time with my friends. And so even if I'm playing badly, You're having a game. It's like basketball. Like, you're playing around. Like, you're just having fun. Just have some fun.
Perspective. That's powerful. I like that. Yeah. I like the shark repellent.
And I love the response.
The response is great. And I like the kind of the perspective on it, because at the end of the day, it is golf and it is fun. And, you know, I have emblazoned on my leather golf scorecard holder.
He reached back. I thought he was going to say,
I thought he had it with him. I was like, that's dedicated.
No, I thought he had a tattoo. I had it emblazoned on my buttocks.
Disappeared in my pockets.
Where I heard it regarding golf. But it says, a bad day golfing beats a good day at work. And it is just a true adage in my belief that at least I'm out here enjoying wonderful weather, even if it's cold or hot. I could be doing way worse things.
Exactly.
Yep. It's good perspective. Well, thanks again for listening to another episode of For the Record. If you like this podcast, please like and subscribe and follow us on our socials. And we will be back with another episode soon.
And that's ForTheRecord.com, FORE, TheRecord.com.
Like, comment, subscribe, join our socials.